Rodeo returns May 14th through the 17th. Four nights of rodeo excitement and fun for the whole family. We even added breakaway roping. Get your tickets now at readingrodeo.com. Bulls, barrels, broncs, and big-time thrills. Thank you to our sponsors, Sierra Pacific Industries, Block Beverage, Pennington Whiskey, SNL Group, Reading Rancheria, Reading Rodeo, May 14th through the 17th. Get your tickets now at readingrodeo.com.
Join Aaron and Bill for We the People Radio, Sundays, noon until 2.
It's conservative talk radio with a liberal dose of humor. Get the whole story from experts around the world delivering facts rather than opinion.
Missed a show? Busy at noon? No problem. Listen to our free archives when you have time. No commercial interruptions or download restrictions. We the People Radio.
.us.
Ready to turn your dreams into reality? At Simpson University, we offer a private Christian education that enriches your academic journey with faith and purpose. Whether you're pursuing your undergraduate degree, completing your degree, or advancing through graduate studies, our dynamic programs, personalized mentorship, and vibrant community are here to support you. Discover how Simpson University can help you achieve your goals and grow spiritually. Visit simpsonu.edu today to learn more. Simpson University, where your potential is limitless.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300, a reputation for excellence since 1965.
Spring has sprung, and whether it's pollen, dust, dirt, or road grime, Quick and Clean Car Wash at the corner of Market and Eureka Way in downtown Reading has you covered. They offer car wash packages starting at $11, which includes a hand scrub pre-clean, a gentle automated pull-through wash, and a personal towel dry exit. Save money, save water at Quick and Clean Car Wash at the corner of Market and Eureka Way in downtown Reading.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
Attention veterans, did you know that Shasta College and Simpson University have veterans resource centers to assist you in your educational pursuits? These centers offer a wide range of support services, including financial aid, tutoring, IT support, and more. We understand the unique challenges that veterans face and are committed to helping you succeed. Our experienced staff is here to help you navigate the college experience and achieve your academic and career goals. Don't let anything stand in your way. This message is brought to you by Senator Maurice Johannesson, former Secretary of California Veterans Affairs.
Join Aaron and Bill for We the People Radio, Sundays, noon until 2.
It's conservative talk radio with a liberal dose of humor. Get the whole story from experts around the world delivering facts rather than opinion.
Missed a show? Busy at noon? No problem. Listen to our free archives when you have time. No commercial interruptions or download restrictions. We the People Radio.
.us.
This is Carl Bott. Join Linda and me Monday through Friday from 7 to 9 a.m. for Free Fire Radio right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio. We're going to discuss what's happening in our city, county, state, and nation. Join in. Miss a day, miss a lot. Free Fire Radio, Monday through Friday, 7 to 9 a.m.
Georgia Tech on June 27th. we'll hop around a bit here. So on the vice presidential question, Tim Walz was an unusual choice when he was announced and became more unusual along the way. Why do you think it was him? Was it the fact that he had just stumbled upon this weird talking point that the Democrats glommed onto? Is it because they could not choose Governor Shapiro because he was Jewish, that their options were then limited? Why did Kamala decide Tim Walz is the guy?
Both of your answers are correct, right? First, the weird thing went viral, and the media loved it. They thought he was, like, really cool. And the Kamala campaign, I guess, thought that, why don't we go with him? Because he's kind of, you know, he has the jazz hands, and he's got a lot of energy, and, you know, maybe this could be the guy that could appeal to Midwest voters because he's a governor of Minnesota, grew up in Nebraska. But, yeah, the second part is true. You had the Democrat Party that was petrified of the anti-Semitic wing of the party, and also petrified to lose the state of Michigan, especially the city of Dearborn, because that has a high Muslim population. By choosing Shapiro, they thought that that would cost them too many votes. Meanwhile, Josh Shapiro is at something like 62% approval in a state that was absolutely crucial for her to win. And he's pretty good on this stuff, but he's somewhat moderate. So that may have normalized the tick a little bit. Instead, she missed that 2-inch putt. And went with that, again, goofy 80s sitcom dad who is Tim Walz, who only lied about carrying weapons of war, only lied about being in Hong Kong during the Tiananmen Square massacre. And then, oddly, when he was playing AOC in, like, Madden, like, you know, the video football game, said, that AOC runs a real mean pick six. And as a football coach myself, I'm like, you don't run a pick six. It just kind of happens. There is no plan. It's just, it's a tip ball. You jump the route. But when I heard that, that was a bridge too far for me. And I talk about it in the book. So yeah, that was her one decision she had to make during the campaign, Kamala Harris. And boy, was it the wrong one.
The greatest comeback ever is the new book by Joe Concha, Inside Trump's Big Beautiful Campaign. Democrats had to make a decision once Joe Biden exited the race, and they essentially said, nope, we don't want any challengers. It's Kamala Harris. You mentioned in the book part of it could have been because of the massive war chest that was already put together, $350 million. Do you think that after Kamala Harris raised $1 billion, some Democrats maybe looked and said, man, if she could raise $1 billion, anyone could have raised $1 billion. We actually could have had a better candidate here.
Oh, God, yeah, because it wasn't so much for Kamala and rallying around her candidacy. It was all about taking out Trump, you know, as far as him not getting back to the Oval. So you could have just, it's a variable, like in a math equation. Anybody could have been X in this equation, and they would have raised. I saw a number that even said it was as high as $1.5 billion. But either way, that's in 100 days. They blew through that money and actually had a deficit after the election. They're asking for, like, for more campaign funds just to pay it off. And you're thinking, where did that money go exactly? So we talk about that in the book. Now, Oprah Winfrey, who's supposed to be a big Kamala supporter, they paid her production company $1 million. And I'm thinking, Oprah's worth like $1 billion herself, and wouldn't she just take one for the team here and say, hey, we got to defeat Hitler, so, you know, free of charge? No. So $1 million goes there. To the Who's Your Daddy podcast, they spent $500,000 on, like, fixing up the studio for the host. And you're like, why would they have to do that? And meanwhile, they didn't even go on Joe Rogan in the process. And then they paid off all these celebrities to perform at her rallies to boost the attendance, to make it look like there was this groundswell of support for Kamala Harris. And obviously, all, again, that got them no swing states and no popular vote, and they lost the Senate. So I've just never seen a more craptastic campaign than this. But hey, again, it helped the book write itself, that's for sure.
On the other hand, you've got Donald Trump back running for president. And I admit, and I have previously on the show, I was concerned because I was worried that this time around, Trump's been through two campaigns previously, that perhaps you've burned through your A-list campaign workers and your B-list campaign workers, and who's left to run this campaign. And I was worried, and I shouldn't have been, because this was a brilliant campaign behind the scenes by President Trump and by those he had working for him. Who do you credit behind the scenes for really sparking Donald Trump and pushing this campaign forward?
So when I went to the Wildwood rally, and that was in May of 2024, that was Wildwood, New Jersey, and I'm from Jersey, never been to a Trump rally before because they simply just don't come around here. So I asked the Trump campaign, hey, you know, can I get backstage this rally, talk to the president? And they arranged everything right down to I got to fly on the Trump plane, which was cool. And they served Wendy's, which I thought was appropriate on some level. Not McDonald's, but like apparently the airport only had Wendy's. But anyway, so on that plane, answer your question, was Chris LaCivita. And he was one of the top campaign advisors. And he's been around the block forever. And he just ran, I think, a flawless campaign along with Susie Wiles, who's now the president's chief of staff. So he hired the right people this time. I think 2020, he didn't have a very good campaign, or at least it wasn't run very well. And obviously COVID just put everything upside down and took away all Trump's strengths as far as rallies and the like. So yeah, La Civita and Susie Wiles, you didn't see a lot of leaks out of this campaign this time. And they made all the right moves, including instead of, I don't know, doing a speech at the Ellipse like Kamala Harris did, which was forgotten like 5 minutes afterwards, Trump decided to go to McDonald's and work, right, be the fries guy and be the drive-through guy. And there's a picture of him on the cover of the book waving goodbye to one customer. And when my publishers were like, well, we're going to go with the assassination photo, right, like the first one with the blood on his face, fight, 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 and his fist in the air, I said, no, we got to go to McDonald's.
We will return in just a moment and talk more with Joe Concha. He's the author of the new book, The Greatest Comeback Ever, Inside Trump's Big, Beautiful Campaign. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
First scene. The name Detroit comes from a French word that means straight, like a body of water, which in turn comes from the city's positioning around the Detroit River. The river comes from Lake Erie, one of the five Great Lakes. The city still remains as one of the oldest and most important cities in the Midwest. So the name comes from French settlements in the early 18th century, which was roughly 300 years ago. The land itself has been populated for over 11,000 years by many different peoples, including the Iroquois and the Hurons. Rich in resources, it was highly contested, and after many battles, ultimately ended up within the United States, first as a territory and then as part of the state of Michigan. It has since earned the nickname of the Motor City due to its history with Henry Ford. This has been What's in a Name. My name is Megan Pinto.
Hi, I'm Jordan, a student at Hillsdale College. Here is President of Hillsdale College, Dr. Larry Arn, on the legislative vesting clause of the Constitution.
Article 1, Section 1 of the Constitution states, all legislative powers herein granted shall be vested in a Congress of the United States. To the founders, legislative power was the power to make laws that apply to all alike that are clear and easy to understand. The Constitution says all legislative powers, and that means Congress cannot rightfully delegate these powers to some other body. Today our laws are thousands of pages long. Sometimes rules are tens of thousands, and no one can read them. Congress has abdicated its legislative power to unelected bureaucrats and countless executive agencies. This is a violation of Article 1, Section 1 of the Constitution.
This Constitution Minute was brought to you by Hillsdale College. To receive a free pocket Constitution and Declaration, go to ConstitutionMinute.com.
Hi, I'm Joshua Palladino, a PhD candidate at Hillsdale College. Here's master's student Theodore Madrid with a message from Thomas Jefferson on the role of the federal and state governments under the Constitution.
In a letter to Judge William Johnson, Thomas Jefferson said, I believe the states can best govern our home concerns, the general government our foreign ones. I wish, therefore, to see maintained that wholesome distribution of powers established by the Constitution for the limitation of both, and never to see all offices transferred to Washington, where further withdrawn from the eyes of the people, they may more secretly be bought and sold as at market.
Hillsdale College, pursuing truth, defending liberty since 1844.
Welcome to the Old Ball Game, where we talk about the past of America's favorite pastime. I'm Tay Christensen. Today we talk about Doc Adams, an early baseball player and the creator of the shortstop position. Adams was born in Mount Vernon, New Hampshire on November 1, 1814. Adams began playing with the New York Baseball Club in 1840. This team was formed about 8 years before the New York Knickerbockers. However, when the Knickerbockers came to be in 1845, they gave him an invitation to play with them. By November of 1845, Adams was a member of the New York Knickerbockers. He went on to become an influential player for the team. Adams is credited with the formation of the shortstop position. Early baseball games were played with big gaps between first and second and third bases, but the shortstop helped to bridge the gap between second and third. The position was also created to assist the outfielders in throwing the ball into the three infielders. However, as game regulations changed and the aerodynamics of a baseball changed over time, allowing it to travel further, the position changed along with it. Although Adams had many other impacts on the baseball community, the creation of the shortstop position is perhaps his most influential act. This has been the Old Ball Game on Radio Free Hillsdale 101.7 FM.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We continue our conversation with Joe Concha, Fox News contributor and author of the new book, The Greatest Comeback Ever, Inside Trump's Big Beautiful Campaign. Joe, we talked before the break about that McDonald's photo. It's on the cover of The Greatest Comeback Ever. You've got Trump also driving that garbage truck after the comments by President Biden.
That's right.
He did well with UAW-type people. You mentioned the endorsement that Kamala lacked was not necessarily the Washington Post, but the Teamsters who refused to endorse Harris in this presidential campaign. Why are the blue-collar workers, the Teamsters, the UAW, so attracted to this rich guy who's been in, you know, business all his life and buys and sells skyscrapers, right, and wears cufflinks like he does on the cover? What is that connection? Why does that happen?
I think ultimately, you know, he's maybe seen as a builder, a construction guy first, not that he's building the buildings, but Trump doesn't ever cross as a billionaire. I mean, sometimes he does, and sometimes he's very relatable. But the minute, and if you see the back of the book, there's all predictions on how Trump's going to get, you know, smoked and just he's going to lose. And then the last prediction is from me, October of 2024, I said on Sean Hannity's TV show, I said, Trump's going to win this. He's going to win it quite easily. Save the tape. This is how it's going to end. And Sean's like, oh, you're the most bullish person on this. I said, yeah. And then I explained why. And the reason primarily was because the Teamsters had internal polls in terms of who the rank and file were going to vote for. And when Joe Biden was in the race, Biden was leading in that category by 10 points. And then when Kamala came into the race against Trump, then Trump was up 30. I'm like, that's a 40-point swing? The Teamsters, they're huge in Pennsylvania, for example. Mm-hmm. And then you heard about the UAW and those workers as well breaking for Trump, and U.S. Steel and restaurant workers, no tax on tips. Beautiful. Again, that was just a stroke of genius. And then 3 days later, Kamala says, oh, yeah, I like that idea, too. It's like, okay, there's no original thought here. So, yeah, once I heard that that rank and file union members were breaking to Trump, and you saw the black vote going more towards Trump and Latinos definitely going more towards Trump, I said, who is left to vote for Kamala Harris outside of single young women? And that's when I was as bullish as I was and said, I don't see how he loses. If Democrats can't get those votes, they can't win elections. And it's that simple.
Joe Concha with us, the new book, The Greatest Comeback Ever, Inside Trump's Big Beautiful Campaign. You ask a question in the book. When did the media get so out of touch? And point to the Dan Rather document incident in 2004, which I think is a good answer. I go back to 2000 and the idea in the media that, you know, Bush 41 could win. Bob Dole losing was their kind of guy. But you have Bush come in, the cowboy from Texas, who didn't talk like them, didn't think like them. And, you know, there's not a lot of comparison between George W. Bush and Donald Trump, but they are outsiders in kind of a similar way. And when Bush beat Gore, the ultimate government insider, you know, left-wing Democrat guy, his dad is a senator, right, he's a senator, I think that broke them in some way, and it just has carried over now for virtually 25 years.
You're so right about that. And even you can make the same case for Barack Obama, an outsider, right? Like he was in the Senate for 5 minutes before he ran for president, mm-hmm. but he was seen as somebody different, not just because of the color of his skin, just in general, right? Not your typical kind of Democrat, obviously electric on the campaign trail. So Obama was an outsider. George W. Bush, you know, baseball owner also as well. You're right. A guy you could relate to, outsider. And then obviously Donald Trump, outsider. So I dismissed the 2020 election just for the sake that COVID was so rare, and without COVID, Trump beats Biden. And I actually do say in the book that it's better that Trump lost 2020 because he would have had a hostile House and Senate waiting for him, and then impeachment just would have gone on forever, right? Here, at least, he was able to pick like a whole new cabinet, all the people that he wanted around him, and he has a House and a Senate that's working with him, as we've seen in these first 100 days. So you're right about that, though. Outsiders tend to win more, and that's why the Democrats now, they can't run Kamala Harris again or a Cory Booker, or you know, they're going to need somebody from the outside, and maybe they see AOC as that person, but then they'll lose 51 states, which is mathematically impossible, but that they'll find a way if she is a candidate. But maybe it'll be somebody like John Stewart, like somebody we're not even thinking of right now. Mark Cuban, maybe he'll get talked into doing it. I think that's the only way they win is if they go outside the establishment. And Republicans, for that matter, that may be the same case, but I think J.D. Vance is seen as an outsider as well.
Very interesting. Let me follow on that. So all this jockeying by current Democratic governors and Gavin Newsom being apologetic in some ways and J.B. Pritzker embracing the far left element of the party and the AOC wing of the party and Gretchen Whitmer saying, well, you know, I can kind of work with Trump here, even though she covers her face with a folder when she's inside the Oval Office. Is all that for naught? Do you think Democratic voters will look for someone not a politician in 2028?
I hate to say it, but I think that you need a celebrity aspect to a certain extent to win a presidency these days, right? And Obama had that. Obviously, Donald Trump definitely has that. So I don't know. Like, I look at Andy Beshear, for example, and he's the governor of Kentucky. And Kentucky, obviously, is a fairly deep red state, but Beshear is a Democrat.
Yeah.
And he won re-election easily. And then I look at his approval rating, 68% approval. So like, they should probably run Andy Beshear, right? Because he seems to have some crossover appeal. He comes across as normal. He's boring. Yeah. But in the end, maybe people will want boring, but no, I think they want more Democrats to, at least in primaries, right? I remember Michael Bloomberg ran in 2020, and I liked Bloomberg, as the mayor of New York, having lived in New York, worked in New York. So when he ran, I go, shit, they're going to nominate him. I mean, he's a slam dunk. And then he was out like in a couple of weeks because I guess he came across as too boring and he wasn't radical enough. So that's where I wonder, like, can a Beshear, can a Jared Polis, those type of people, governors, as you mentioned, can they win? And I keep thinking of Bloomberg, and I'm like, no, they're going to go for the sizzle over the steak every time.
Joe Concha, his book, The Greatest Comeback Ever. What do you see as the biggest differences between Trump 1.0, his first term, Trump 2.0, his second term? We've got 100 plus days now under our belt. What do you see as the differences in his governing style?
This is Hillsdale. I can't use the word I want to use, but so I'll just shorten it to, he doesn't give an F this time. Like, he was way too concerned about fighting every battle his first time in and was somewhat paranoid, and rightly so, because the minute he got in, all he heard about was that he was an agent of Russia, right, for example. Mm-hmm. And then obviously impeachment starts, and he was just reading way too much press reports, thinking that they were objective, I guess, maybe on some level. And there were a ton of leaks out of his White House because he had a lot of people around him who were working against his agenda. So the difference is this time, as I mentioned before, he has the cabinet that he wants. You don't see the leaks coming out as much anymore. And he's playing a long game where he's governing like a guy who isn't going to serve a third term. I know he jokes about that, but he's doing this tariff thing knowing that, yeah, you're going to break some eggs in the beginning and there's going to be market volatility and it may upset some things within the economy, but ultimately in the long run it's the best thing to do. So right now he just doesn't give an F and he's just moving forward with his agenda and he's not worrying about fighting all those little battles like he did in the first term. And I think that shows maturity and it shows experience.
Very quickly, Joe, you made the early prediction that Trump was going to win in 2024. I'll ask you to put on the prediction hat one more time.
Ooh.
I'm curious if Republicans and conservatives can stay on the correct side, the right side of these 80-20 issues, because if you do, that's an easy roadway to another victory in 2028. Can Republicans continue to have this sort of cultural advantage on Democrats for the next 3 years?
Yeah, because it would be political suicide otherwise if they didn't, right? And it's not that hard to be on the 80 side of these 80-20 issues. Like, yeah, I don't think my daughter should compete against other boys in sports. That's pretty easy. Hey, I don't think that we should bring back those who entered the country illegally, who were engaged in human trafficking and beat their wife, like the Maryland man that we hear so much about, Abrego Garcia. I don't think that we should have sex changes for those who are here illegally and in prison. Like, it's all these things. As long as they just keep doing what they're doing, they'll be fine. I think if J.D. Vance is your nominee, and I believe he will be, then I think that's a pretty unstoppable person to beat because we saw how impressive he was in that vice presidential debate.
Joe Concha, Fox News contributor, author of the brand new book, The Greatest Comeback Ever, Inside Trump's Big Beautiful Campaign. Joe, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
That was fun. Thanks so much. Have a good one.
Up next, we talk with Dr. Derek Stoff from Hillsdale's Music Department about the organ as a musical instrument. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
You're listening to KCNR 96.5 FM at 1460 AM, your talk radio, online at kcnr1460.com. Now is a great time to prepare for the upcoming wildfire season. REU and city staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risk to our power lines, facilities, and the community. You can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home. Clear debris from your roof and gutter and clear dead vegetation on your property. For information about tree trimming and proximity to power lines, call 530-224-4356. Please remember, we all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community.
Experience Glowing Wild, an illuminated wildlife lantern festival at the Sundial Bridge and Turtle Bay Exploration Park in Redding, California. Open select nights April 4th through June 8th, 7 to 10 p.m.
featuring 10 acres of illuminated gardens filled with Asian lanterns inspired by plants and animals from around the world, plus food, drinks, live performances on select nights, and much more. Don't miss Turtle Bay's Glowing Wild Lantern Festival at the Sundial Bridge. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
Hi, it's Mark from Haven Humane Society. Are you looking to add to your family? We have puppies, kittens, small critters, and farm animals. Each year, we have thousands of amazing animals looking for homes come into our lives, and we hope to have them join yours. Follow us on social media and find our links on our website at havenhumane.org. Watch our weekly content on YouTube, like our Mark's Monday mashup, when we talk about what's going on and introduce you to our team and adoptable animals. Get involved. Volunteer. Thank you for all your continued support. Together, we are moving closer to our ultimate goal of a North State with no more homeless pets.
Join Token's radio show every Tuesday night starting at 6 on 96.5 FM and AM 1460 as hosts Christy Matthews and Linda Kent explore the exciting world of cryptocurrency and blockchain technology. Learn how Bitcoin is revolutionizing finance and grasp sound money principles. Hear new perspectives on achieving financial freedom beyond broken institutions. The future of money is here. Empower yourself with knowledge. Listen to Token's radio show with Linda and Christy Tuesday nights at 6 on KCNR.
Hey, it's your liberty-loving Latino amigo, Rich Valdez, host of America at Night. Weeknights, we're letting you know what's happening live all across America. We'll have newsmakers and experts coming on, talking about the hot topics of the day. Plus, in our third hour, whatever you want to talk about with open phones across America, our nightly town hall. I look forward to hearing from you on the next America at Night with me, Rich Valdez.
Weeknights from 7 to 10 p.m. on KCNR.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Do you have a crazy schedule and can't seem to get to a class to qualify for your CCW, CCW renewal, or maybe learn to use that new firearm you just purchased? Consider a private class with NFI. Learn to shoot a handgun, rifle, shotgun, or even a BB gun. Classes are taught by an instructor that you choose on your dates and location. Give NFI a call at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and I'll see you at the range.
John Cruz here with America Outdoors Radio. Be sure to tune in this weekend and catch the latest in fishing, hunting, conservation, and destinations. If you love spending time in the field or on the water or in the woods, you're going to love this show. It's America Outdoors Radio, the fastest growing outdoors radio show in the nation. Tune in Saturdays from noon to 1 p.m. on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM KCNR, your talk radio.
Join me, Mark Levin, weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. KCNR, your talk radio.
Donald Trump is doing something that's never been done in American history.
Now, what Trump is trying to do all at once,
he wants to, what I call, reindustrialize America.
Mark Levin is on the radio.
KCNR, your talk radio.
Need help with your health insurance? We've got you covered. At Shasta Community Health Center, we offer this free service to our community. Our enrollment counselors can assist you with new applications, renewals, troubleshooting, and answering your questions about covered California plans or Medi-Cal, also known as Medicaid or Partnership Health Plan. We're here to help you make the best choice for you and your family. Call our outreach and enrollment team at 530-229-5117 to get help today. Shasta Community Health Center, because SCHC cares.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6.05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6.05 p.m., right after the news, for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
You remember when quality mattered more and people advertised low prices? When craftsmanship wasn't just a buzzword, but a way of life. At Cascade Curations, they never forgot. Their hand-selected collections honor that American tradition and the quality you grew up with. Quality clothing and low prices, just like they used to make them. Come see their showroom of men's and women's clothing, across from Jack's Grill on California Street. And as always, they have free parking for their customers. Go by and see for yourself. Cascade Curations.
Hi,
This is Chuck Kenny, owner of Shasta Gas Propane and a Vietnam veteran. With Memorial Day coming up this 26th of May, I would like to remind you that it is more than a three-day weekend. With the words from President Ronald Reagan in one of his many Memorial Day speeches, he had just received the bodies of four Marines who had died while on active duty. He said, "There is a special sadness that accompanies the death of service members because our country is never quite good enough to them. Not really. We can't be, because what they gave us is beyond our power to repay. And all we can do is remember. Most of them were boys and girls when they died, and they gave up two lives, the one they were living and the one they would have lived. They gave up everything for us, and all we can do is remember and honor them. This Memorial Day, please remember and honor our fallen service men and women."
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Obtaining a California concealed weapons license will allow the licensed individual to transport a listed handgun in their vehicle or on their person in public. For application instructions, training, and other information, contact NFI at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
Your feet can't handle such small keys trying to play.
Right.
You'll get in trouble if you play a keyboard-sized piano with your feet. Your teacher will yell at you like I will yell at my daughter if she ever tried that. There are 30 or 31 pedals. And so imagine this. We have the simplest organ could consist of one pipe for every one of those keys, and if it's a manual of 61 keys, you're going to have 61 separate pipes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we usually call a rank. And if they were spread from lowest to highest right in front of your eyes, you would see a kind of slope of pipes from tallest down to the smallest. You might have a pipe that reaches the ceiling here, and then the lowest one might be less than a foot tall. And that's just one rank, or what we eventually call one stop on an organ. And organs usually have many, many stops, and that means that if you have an organ with 30 stops on a particular manual, that means 30 ranks of these pipes, usually, and possibly more. That would be at least 1,800 pipes hidden behind you most often, and or in front of you, depending on the direction you're playing. And it's usually more than that, because there are some stops that involve more than one pipe mm-hmm. or key that you push down. The only way to create variety in this case is for the organ builder to add new stops that offer contrast, or that can be added to the existing or fundamental stops to make the instrument louder or fuller. We use these different ways of describing the sound. They're not always just loud, but also a sense of fullness, or a sense of even kind of empty or hollow sounds that you can produce by artfully selecting from among the different ranks of pipes available to you.
Can you give us a very brief history of the organ? When do we see this becoming developed?
You can actually find organs in late antiquity, in the Greeks and Romans, this idea of a water organ, and we've got imagery of what these looked like. And the water here is used instead of what we might think of as the air reservoir in a mm-hmm. modern instrument. You've got to keep that air regulated, that air pressure, because as soon as the air pressure increases, the pipes start speaking differently and will eventually stop speaking because they're either overblown or underblown. So the ancients found this idea that using this tank with water in it, in which the bellow pumper can push the water in and keep it even. We don't think that those kind of instruments could have done very much. The imagery shows them only with a few pipes. The real sort of ancestor of our modern organ started in the Middle Ages, where that water mechanism was replaced by air reservoirs. And if you go into the back of an organ, a modern pipe organ, you'll still see these reservoirs. They often have big weights on them to keep the air pressure at a uniform rate. The most important development of, say, let's say the 15th century was when people started figuring out how to stop the sound to certain ranks. Before then, the organ consisted of this huge chest with lots of pipes, and it was either all on or all off.
Mm-hmm.
And so the sound could be very loud, but it couldn't be anything other than that.
Okay.
And so builders began to figure out that if you put a kind of strip of wood with holes drilled into it, underneath the pipes, where the pipes sit, you could move that strip back and forth and cut off the air to certain ranks of pipes. And that's the origin of this notion of stop. The stop is literally stopping air from going to certain pipes on the chest until the organist pulls out that stop, and then the air is let in. So that the expression pulling out all the stops.
Yes.
And that's basically, in the late Middle Ages, the development of that plus the development of the keyboard, a kind of what we think of as a normal keyboard with black and white notes, and the pedal board developed. And from there, the organ has changed mostly not so much in timbre, although that does vary too, but in, say, the Industrial Revolution, organs start getting bigger and bigger, and then with electricity comes the advent of an electric blower, before which you had to play the organ with at least two people. So practicing in church meant bringing someone along to pump the bellows, mm-hmm. or trading off with your fellow students, and now you can, at a flip of a switch, have this done by an electric motor that provides a continuous stream of air. And that is helpful.
Yeah, I imagine so.
But in any case, if you want to assess the major revolution in that electricity and digital technology has made for organ building, nowadays we can have organs that are pipe organs, but they have no pipes, right?
Right.
And they're kind of, in some ways, like a flight simulator, mm-hmm. but we can still experience them as an organ, and people can have in their house an instrument, and they can put their headphones on and sound like they're in a big cathedral.
Yeah.
In some ways, it's fun, and it also opens up opportunities for individuals and churches without financial resources to actually afford to have an instrument. The downside is that, as some people think, that there's a kind of loss of authenticity when it's no longer real pipes making those sounds. But there's always going to be trade-offs when you have new technologies like that.
Dr. Derek Stauff with us from Hillsdale's Music Department. We continue with him after this, talking more about famous composers on the organ and how the instruments played a role in religious services. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
You have a choice when it comes to your cancer care, and I want you to know that at Valor Oncology, we are here to provide the best possible care right here in Reading. I'm Dr. Lauren Strickland, Valor's breast oncology surgeon, and I'm proud to serve this community that I call home. When you come to Valor Oncology, you'll see the same dedicated team at every visit, physicians who know your history and are committed to your care. We offer state-of-the-art technology that rivals major cancer centers, combined with the personalized care you deserve. We are not just a team of doctors. We are part of the fabric of this community, and we are here for you today and tomorrow. When it comes to your health, you deserve expert care, compassion, and stability. Ask your doctor to refer you to Valor Oncology, because we're committed to you and we're committed to Reading. Call 530-900-4000 or visit valor.org to schedule a consultation. Valor Oncology, rooted in Reading, focused on you.
Looking for work? O2 Employment Services has been working with local job seekers for the past 20 years. If you're tired of uploading your resume and getting no response, it's time to let O2 help you find that perfect position. Oh, and by the way, you pay absolutely nothing for our service. If you'd like our help, head on over to our website at o2es.com, click apply now, and complete our online application. We have connections with over 600 local businesses. Once we have your information and understand what you're looking for,
for? We can introduce you to all the positions you may wish to consider. We currently have over 100 available positions, and we would love to match you with the one you're looking for. O2 Employment Services, the North State's leading staffing agency. Give us a call at 530-223-4674. That's 530-223-4674. Or visit us online at o2es.com.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Auto Body. You've been in an accident with your vehicle. You call your insurance. The first thing they do is tell you where to go to get an estimate and repairs. Well, tell them where to go and come see us at Coachmaster. They're sending you to their discount repair shop to get the cheapest repair possible. This is not in your best interest. You have the right to choose Coachmaster to do your repairs. All we need is your claim number and we can handle the entire process. At Coachmaster, we don't repair your vehicle for the insurance company. We repair it for you. We use quality parts and products to ensure the highest quality repairs. Your vehicle will be returned to a pre-loss condition. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Coachmaster Collision Repair continues to be the leader in the North State for advanced technology in the collision repair industry. Remember Coachmaster on East Side Road. Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
We continue now with Dr. Derek Stoff from Hillsdale's Music Department, talking about the organ as a musical instrument. Dr. Stoff.
You told us earlier, Derek, that the piano was more of a percussive instrument, the organ a wind instrument. Does that mean that pianists can easily transition to play organ? What are the different kind of, I guess, techniques that would be different from playing piano to playing the organ?
Yeah, it's a wind instrument, but being able to play a recorder or a flute gives you no advantage in playing the organ, right? The skill set for playing it is entirely keyboard technique, and that means that pianists are really in the best position to take up the organ. And usually as a teacher, I ask that my students first have many, many years of piano study so that we can concentrate when we learn on the organ, the things that are most unique to the organ.
Mm-hmm.
So kids learning their basic scales, harmonies, finger techniques, all that can be done at a piano and learning piano repertory so that when we get to the organ, you can concentrate on other things. The biggest difference is when you approach the organ is that unlike the piano, the organ has several manuals, several keyboards, and sometimes you have to learn to move between those keyboards within a piece, which you would never do at a piano.
Sure.
So the skill of jumping between these, there are even pieces where you actually can play on two manuals at the same time with your thumbs playing on the lower manual and the rest of your hands playing above it. And you could actually repeat that for three manuals in which I have a top keyboard that I'm playing, say, with my left four fingers, the middle keyboard, which I'm playing with my left thumb and right four fingers.
Right.
And then my right thumb is down on the bottom. It's conceivable that there are pieces where you'd need to do some combination like that. You'd never do that at a piano.
Sure.
But also, of course, the big hurdle for pianists is to learn to use your feet like mm-hmm. another keyboard. And that takes time, and it's best done when you're young because your brains are still flexible. But kids have to be tall enough to actually reach the pedal board to do that. So usually kids don't start on the organ until they're fairly tall and then they're in like high school age. This is when I started. But you have to then break a bunch of habits.
Sure. Are there any famous composers known primarily perhaps for their work on the organ, composing on the organ?
There are lots of composers from the 19th and 20th century who mostly wrote for the organ or who are famous mostly for the organ, but they aren't generally as famous in broader music history. If you want to hear the sort of most household names or most famous composers, you'd have to go, who happened to write a lot of organ music, you'd have to go back to the 18th century and usually to the 17th century, which is really the heyday for the leading composers who happened to be organists, leading composers of the age. And Bach is one of the most famous, probably the best example here. Someone in his day who was actually known more for his organ playing than he was for many of the compositions that he's subsequently become famous for, like the Brandenburg Concertos, mm-hmm. or his Passions, which were barely known in his day outside of his family circle. But within central Germany and within the broader German-speaking lands, Bach was pretty well known as a leading organist. And before Bach, you can find people like the famous composer from North Germany, from the city of Lübeck, named Dietrich Buxtehude, whom Bach visited as a youth and to hear and presumably to study with. And Buxtehude is a famous composer. There's plenty of other not household name composers of the 17th century that I know and mm-hmm. I teach, because I teach 17th century music. And those composers are still famous today, but famous also for their organ music. When we get into later ages, there are composers that are famous that wrote, that sometimes dabbled in organ music that is interesting. Mendelssohn, of course, wrote a number of organ works that are still in the repertory. But there begin to be a lot of famous composers there's always been famous composers who haven't written for organ that we kind of wish did. Mozart, who apparently played, and Beethoven, who certainly played the organ, never really wrote anything down. One of the most famous players of the 19th century was the composer Anton Bruckner, who's famous for his symphonies, but made a reputation of improvising. And because no one ever wrote any of that down, as far as I know, we don't have any of his famed organ improvisations. In the 20th century, you get a lot of composers devoted to organ music, and most of them are professional organists who happen to also write music. Mm-hmm. And that, as we'd expect in the 20th century, the sheer variety and breadth here is hard to describe, and listeners might not necessarily want to go to some of the most adventurous of 20th century organ music. I try to get my students to play some of this as a sort of getting a sampling of these composers. But if you had to choose one, the most sort of famous modernist composer who happens to write a lot for organ and whose works are infused with the spirit of Catholicism is Olivier Messiaen. He's a French composer who lived in up to 1986. Hmm. And whose music is very adventurous. He was respected by the sort of leading avant-garde radical composers, but his music is in many ways also interestingly traditional, even as it is sometimes difficult to listen to. It engages with important elements of theology.
In what ways would you say the organs influence cultural or musical traditions?
The organ has had a huge impact on the experience of congregations in worship. It's primarily associated with church, even as there are, or there have been over the past century or two, well-known venues for organs outside of the church. There's, of course, an interesting tradition in the early age of theaters, of theater organs, mm-hmm. sometimes to accompany silent films. But that has, by and large, now become kind of just a novelty.
Right.
It's fun to go watch those things, but people across history, the majority of at least Christian worshipers in certain areas of Europe and the New World have encountered the organ mostly in church, and that's probably speaking the obvious. It wasn't always that case. The organ wasn't used, especially when we talk about congregational singing, mm-hmm. to accompany the congregation. That's probably a kind of Protestant development that we see first in 17th century Lutheranism and eventually in some Reformed churches, and then in the 18th and especially the 19th century is really when the broader range of Protestants, Anglicans, Congregationalists, Presbyterians started to pick up the idea of using the organ to accompany hymns. But before that, in Catholic Europe and in among the magisterial Protestant churches, the organs in the 16th century especially would be used either by themselves at particular points in worship or in tandem with the choir, but not even usually that, playing a very simple accompanimental role to the choir. And it's not until really the 19th century and really the 20th century that the organ becomes used to do very elaborate accompaniments to the choir, to accompany lots of congregational singing. And really, it's not until Vatican II that the Catholic worship started to use the organ in a similar way to accompany congregational singing. And you can see that older organs in Catholic churches are often smaller.
Dr. Derek Stauff, he is Associate Professor of Music here at Hillsdale College, as we talk about the organ as musical instrument. Dr. Stauff, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Joe Concha, his brand new book, The Greatest Comeback Ever, and Dr. Derek Stauff from Hillsdale's English Department. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the podcast. Find it at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Court is in session with Letter of the Law on Radio Free Hillsdale 101.7 FM. Hello, my name is Megan Pidcock, and you're listening to Letter of the Law on Radio Free Hillsdale 101.7 FM, where I tell you all about the world's wackiest laws that are still on the books. Today, we're taking a trip to Southington, Connecticut, where silly string is quite the controversial subject. Silly string and smoke bombs are both banned at public events, such as parades and carnivals, with a penalty of a $99 fine if people are caught selling or using the novelty products. This ban of silly string was sparked first at a fall festival in 1993, where town members sprayed silly string on parade marchers, local monuments, cars, and other festival goers. This resulted in stained clothing, cars, and marching band instruments. The silly string spray was so bad that two policemen almost lost control of their motorcycles. Talk about an explosion of color. The event sparked a huge debate amongst the town, as shortly after a proposal was introduced to the town council that banned silly string and smoke bombs across Southington in both public and private spaces. Members claimed this potential ordinance was created at the request of the police force, citing safety concerns. However, many council members rejected the ordinance, claiming it was far too harsh. After an attorney revised and returned the proposal to the council, and about a year after the inciting incident, the ordinance was passed. As of 1994, silly string and smoke bombs are officially banned from public property and from public town events. So, be sure to mind your fun in Southington, Connecticut, and not get caught with any illegal silly string. This has been Megan Pidcock on Letter of the Law. If you want to hear more student shows like this, go to RadioFreeHillsdale.com. Once again, you're listening to Radio Free Hillsdale 101.7 FM.
Hi, I'm Steven, a student at Hillsdale College. Here is President of Hillsdale College, Dr. Larry Arn, on the enduring importance of federalism.
Many in Washington today have grown so accustomed to centralized bureaucracy that they think of federalism as old-fashioned, kind of like fife and drum music. Those who wrote the Constitution saw federalism as a vital principle of free government in a large republic. The division of power between the federal government, state governments, and local governments would serve as an important protection against tyranny. The founders also understood that while the federal government is essential for national matters like foreign policy and defense, governments closer to the people were far better suited to oversee local matters. As we see in the problems that result from centralized bureaucracy today, there's nothing out of date about the founders' argument for federalism.
This Constitution Minute was brought to you by Hillsdale College. To receive a free pocket constitution and declaration, go to constitutionminute.com.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.